Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Music, 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 da 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 na 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 Batman.
That's the you are my number one guy, except for the even older Batman.
Yeah, super old Batman. We're walking up walls here, like we're climbing up buildings.
Isn't that Spider-Man?
No, I mean when Batman would like throw the thing, the hook, and like he would like they would film it sideways or flip it sideways, but he'd be walking on
right. It was going up a building. Very high quality effects back then.
Yeah, Adam West, if you guys don't know. Welcome everyone to another episode of the Command Zone. We are past our golden years. We are on episode numero 51. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
And today we have a fun topic, and we also, we should let you guys know, have one episode this week because GP Vegas is on the way, and we might be very busy.
We don't know exactly how Vegas is going to work as far as we might do an episode there. That episode might come out this week or next week. We're not sure. We're going to play that a little bit by ear. So officially, we only are promising one episode this week.
Yep.
But unofficially, you know, it could happen. We don't know.
It could happen. We're definitely going to try and record a podcast while we're at Vegas with all the all the awesome people that are going to be there. So that's very exciting. But today we're talking about one of Josh's meanest decks. It is Joyra of the Gitu.
Yes, we have alluded to this deck before. We haven't done a ton of like mean decks. I think we did the Gaddick Teague deck with Alex Kessler from the Masters of Modern. That was very early on. So this is going to be... This is not a nice deck. This is, some people may not like it when you play this deck. This isn't one you pull out very often. In fact, how many times have I played this deck, Jimmy? Maybe only five or six.
I played it, I haven't played it that often. It usually wins when we do play it, unless someone has like a very good counter to that deck in particular. So yeah, it is very powerful and it dominates. So it is definitely a good deck. But before we do that, actually, Josh, I wanted to ask you, are you going to be playing that deck at the GP Vegas Gathering?
I may bring it. I haven't decided which of my decks I'm going to bring, but the gathering itself, very exciting to announce that we have our venue. So it's the date for the gathering we've said before, but it's Thursday, May 28th. It's going to be from 7 p.m. until 1 a.m. It's going to be at the Plaza Hotel, which is in downtown Las Vegas, near the end of Fremont Street. We have a banquet hall there. What you can do is in the show notes, there is going to be a Facebook event link. And any listener is welcome to come, and you can go to the Facebook event. We'd love it if you signed in and let us know that you're coming just so we know how many people to expect. And then you just bring your EDH decks, and you can come sling spells with us. And
Or Draft Conspiracy.
Draft Conspiracy.
Chaos Conspiracy. Oh, there's going to be lots of stuff.
There's going to be a number of personalities from the Magic community there, like the professor from Tolarian Community College.
Reverend En Fuego from BJ Shea's Geek Nation.
Alex and Ben from the Masters of Modern podcast.
Some of the Five Commanders podcast guys.
And Jason Alt and some of the Brainstorm Brewery crew are also going
to
be there.
Yeah, and I've extended invites to other people, both at Wizards, some of the friends, some of our prior guests on the show. So we have lots of people that could potentially be attending. If you guys don't know where the Facebook event invite is, it's going to be in the show notes. We'll also tweet it out at CommandCast, and the information will be readily available. So if you have any questions about what's happening, where it's at, how to get there, etc., best ways to get there, feel free to send us an email, commandcast@rocketgem.com, or tweet at us at CommandCast, and we'll get back to you about that.
Yeah, I think very, very good idea to follow us on Twitter, at CommandCast, at JF Wong for Jimmy, at Josh Lee Kwai for me. Just at least through this week, if you're going to be in Vegas and you want to hook up with us to play any games or come to the gathering, it's just going to be a really good place to keep up to date on everything.
Yeah, also throughout the weekend, because I don't think Josh and I are going to play more than a few rounds of the main event. We will be hanging out, doing side events, also just playing EDH with people where we can fire a game up. So there's going to be a ton of space at the convention hall, and we'll be tweeting out where we are and stuff. So that's also a great way to keep track of us throughout the weekend.
Cool. And speaking of Magic content personalities who are going to be at our party,
Woohoo!
We actually have a friend on the line here from the Five Commanders podcast. We have Phil DeLuca.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good, Phil. Thank you, Phil, for joining us on the line via the Skypes.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me on. It's been very difficult listening to you run through the intro and, you know, at the peril of revealing something behind the curtains, just staying silent through all that when I'm like, yes, I want to play at GP Las Vegas too.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's absolutely. I'm kind of panicking because I'm deproxying all of my really casual decks, and I'm building one of my favorite decks, a Karametra deck, which I swear isn't that mean, but everybody else thinks it is. I'll kind of go into one of the things I want to talk about today. Actually, one of my buddies is going to be there today too. At GP Las Vegas too.
Well, awesome. And your buddy, is he involved with your new project?
Why, yes, he is.
So the reason we have Phil on the show is because he has a new project coming up. It's very exciting. First off, Phil, when is that? What's it called? Let's start there.
Well, it's a brand new podcast, and it's called Commanderin. And that's like a Commandering, but without a G at the end of it. So it's just Commanderin, and it's available right now.
So first of all, I'm guessing by the title that it has to do with Commander and the EDH format. Is that correct?
Yeah, and it's another Commander-oriented podcast, and we take a different tack than we did for the Five Commanders, and even a different tack from what you guys are doing. We're kind of focusing on the community, and by focusing on the community, I mean we have a lot of content from the listeners. We always bring up a deck. We bring up some of their advice. They might have some top card lists, and of course, all of their comments, and so we take a community-oriented tack. And we plan to involve the community members, our listeners, in every one of our podcasts.
Oh, that's very cool. So are we saying that some of the deck lists that you're talking about are coming from, like, listeners of the show?
Yeah, well, what we've been doing is, since we haven't launched and yet we needed community content, there were a couple of people I know out there from the Five Commanders, including Sean Marvin.
Oh yeah, Sean's a local guy from
Mr. E-Meat 4000, I believe.
I think Sean's from Waianae.
Exactly.
How's it, Sean?
How's
Shaka brah.
Hey, Sean. And so what I did was I kind of reached out to a couple of listeners and I asked them for advice or maybe a deck that was related to one of the decks that we were talking about. We actually opened with a Dragon Lord Silumgar deck. In part because one of my co-hosts, and I should have introduced them already. I'll get to that in a minute. But one of my co-hosts is this incredibly, you know, control-oriented Dimir player. He's so mean.
Is this the guy that's coming to our gathering?
No, actually.
Darn.
Let me introduce them. I know, right? I've got two co-hosts. One is a quiet, kind of mad genius named Nate Burgess. He took a break like me from Magic for longer than most of our listeners have been alive, I think. And he's the one who's going to be at GP Las Vegas.
Cool.
I convinced him to start playing Magic after kind of a little debauchery when he came to visit last year. And he's been playing online ever since, and he plays an awful lot. I think he's played more total games of Commander than I have at this point. And he's really smart. He's a great game brain. We worked together when I was making multiplayer games, and he's just fantastic. Our other player is Sean Watson. He's a belligerent Englishman that we met when we were playing games with the Five Commanders community. And this guy also whip smart. He has deadly decks. He is the Dimir player, right? He just loves control. And no matter what colors he's playing, it feels like he's playing black and blue. It's horrible.
It's horrible.
It's so mean.
It sounds like you've assembled a team around you that has a lot of combined knowledge about the game, which is always a good start.
Yeah, they're great guys. They're fun, hopefully fun to listen to, and definitely awesome to play against. And I keep trying to get you guys to kind of join us online if you can. You know, Nate has
you
talking
hear
about
that
mean
sharp intake
with Joyra.
Yeah, the sharp intake of breath, breath as yeah. I thought about going to like 50 bots and buying each card for 3 cents each and then asking myself, wait, do I need foil versions of online cards too?
Don't start, Jimmy. You can start buying foil online cards.
I'm just messing.
But Jimmy, would you double sleeve those cards?
If it was possible, I totally would. And I guess the equivalent of double sleeving in Modo would be like backing up your database. I don't know, but it's all saved.
It's all online. Yeah, it's not
all
your
online
database.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there you go.
So, Phil, what, like, let's talk a little bit of specifics here. What days are you guys planning on to release? Do you know that?
We're looking at dropping it on Tuesday as well. Mm-hmm. it gives, since we record the week before like you guys do, it gives us an opportunity to make edits over the weekend.
Right.
Oh, excellent.
And where can people find you?
Well, I'm glad you asked. We of course have a website, and the website is CommanderinMTG.com. You can find us on Twitter, and that's at CommanderinMTG. I know there's a pattern forming here. I'm break that pattern though. Eventually, our email address, you can get us just at cast@CommanderinMTG.com. And at Facebook, we couldn't get Commander and MTG. Instead, we're facebook.com/CommanderandMTGpodcast.
Ah, very nice.
So,
and for all of you listeners, yeah, of course, all these links will, of course, as always, be in the show notes. So right, you don't need to memorize them right now. You can go find them later.
No, memorize them. Remember them. You will never be able to find them again. Just kidding. And Phil, you have your own Twitter account also. What's your Twitter name?
Oh, my Twitter name is at Ketjak. I'm going to have to spell that. It's K-E-T-J-A-K.
Yeah, you've seen...
It comes from a...
We retweeted some of his stuff before, so you guys may have seen the name floating around.
You'll probably see us retweet the announcements for this stuff when Phil does also. So if you follow us on Twitter, it'll be pretty easy to find Phil and the Commanderin podcast. So that'll make it a lot easier. You do not have to write this down or remember it.
Yeah, cool. I really appreciate that, guys. And I'm looking forward to having you guys on our podcast as well.
We would be very happy and honored to be guests, so thank you very much.
I can guarantee it'll be a blast. We only have three forbidden topics, in part because the British worship a strange goddess queen. But we're not allowed to talk about religion, politics, or Hearthstone.
the third one is
Can we talk about EDH politics?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. EDH politics, but not real politics. We never, ever talk about those.
Of course. Okay. That works for
Fair
me.
Enough.
Yeah, I'm down with that. Great. So make sure you guys check out Phil's new endeavor. All the stuff is going to be in the show notes. We'll also be retweeting it at CommandCast. And thanks, Phil, for letting us know about it. I'm excited to hear you guys' inaugural episode and keep up with y'all.
Thanks a lot. I can't imagine a better way to announce this than with you guys. As you know, I'm a super big fan, so this tickles me a great deal.
Oh, thanks. And of course, I am of the mentality, as is Wedge and Tolarian College and all those guys, that the more content, the better, because we are always a growing community. There should never be any limiting of what we're putting out there, because, you know, we want this game to grow, and all this stuff helps promote that growth.
Yeah, not at all. And
absolutely.
Also, like, personally, I was super bummed when the Five Commanders stopped broadcasting. So this is like filling a hole in my life here where I was like, well, what do I do now? There's a whole show gone every week, and now I know. So thank you, Phil.
Oh, you're welcome. And again, thanks for having me on.
Totally. Cool. Okay, cool.
I'll see you in about a week.
Yes, yeah. I will see you,
we'll see you in Vegas.
Actually, by the time this comes out, absolutely, we'll see you 2 days from the release of this podcast.
Yeah, you're giving away our secrets. You're giving away that this isn't live.
Live? Oh my gosh. Josh gave me a headache thinking about that.
You didn't give Eli.
Hey,
you didn't give Eli a headache. Eli's like, I wish it was live.
Yeah. No edits.
Eli's a real trooper. He does such a great job on your show.
He does.
He really does.
Great dude. All right. Awesome. Thanks so much, Phil. We will talk to you soon. And if you guys are going to be at the Vegas, you get to meet Phil as well. And hopefully we'll see you guys all there in a couple of days.
Also, you can team up with Jimmy and I against Phil rather than the other way around.
Yes,
deal?
That would be wonderful.
Aww.
Deal. I'm in on that deal. We're the ones giving away the prizes, right? We hold the power.
We're going to so get teamed up on and destroyed.
Yeah.
There's nothing. Just prepare to lose every game, dude.
Yep, pretty much. I can't wait.
I'm already ready. I play just to play.
Yeah.
It'll be fun.
All right, cool.
All right, thanks, Phil.
All right, talk to you soon, buddy.
Cool. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, thanks for coming on, Phil. Really appreciate it.
And one last thing before we move on to our main topic. We are on YouTube now. We've put out all our videos on the YouTube channel. And by the way, we've had an amazing first week. I think we're already above 500 subscribers.
Yeah, we're close to 1,000, I think, now.
Huge thank you to Wedge from The Man Source for shouting us out at the beginning of one of his videos.
Yeah, for sure.
That was awesome. Your fans, Wedge, I will just say this, are some of the coolest, nicest people, because they've all been commenting on random videos, and they're always constructive and contributing towards the conversation. So you can't ask for much more than that.
Yeah, it's been pretty awesome. And if you didn't know, recently, in fact, only the last two episodes and now this episode, we switched our background for our videos. So what we did is we did some animations on some of the magic art. And if you haven't checked it out, I mean, I'm biased because I did some of them, but it's pretty cool, the animation. So it's worth just heading over to YouTube, checking out one of the newer videos just to see those cool backgrounds. And, you know, if you want to hit the subscribe button while you're there, I'm not going to stop you.
Yeah. And we've actually had someone from the community be incredibly gracious and actually help us animate some of these as well. Jeffrey Palmer.
If
you guys watch the video, there are some sweet card animations. He takes the individual parts like we have, but he makes them super dynamic and sort of like a short 2 to 3 second sort of animation of a card. And we're going to start using those for like transitions and stuff. But huge shout out to Jeffrey Palmer.
Sweet stuff.
Yeah, I'll put some of his links in the show notes below. So make sure you guys go check out his channel too and give him a shout out for doing sweet animations. All right, let's do a deck tech. Let's talk about
a Joyra.
Mean deck.
Joyra of the Gitu. Let me read her really quick. So Joyra of the Gitu is one and is it. So one, a blue and a red. 3 mana total for a 2/2 legendary creature, human wizard. It says, tap 2, exile a non-land card from your hand. Put 4 time counters on the exiled card. If it doesn't have suspend, it gains suspend. And what suspend is at the beginning of your upkeep, remove a time counter from the card, and then when the last time counter is removed, you can cast it without paying its mana cost. If it's a creature, it has haste.
So this card comes in during your upkeep, correct? So if it's a creature, it's not like you have to play in your first main phase?
Right. You play it as soon as that time counter comes off. In fact, there are multiple ways to take time counters off at a time that's not your upkeep.
Mm-hmm.
Time counters naturally come off one at a time during your upkeep, but if you have other cards that mess with time counters, and there are quite a few, then you can do some tricky things and bring cards into play at times when they wouldn't normally be able to.
Right.
So this deck is very much in the theme of, well, I think we all build a deck like this at some point.
Yeah, I think usually early in your career, especially if you've played a couple games lost with a fun deck, you think to yourself, I need to build a deck that wins.
And not just the meanness of it, but the way that these type of decks win. And I would put it in the category of like Jaleva.
Rakdos.
Narset,
yeah.
It's those decks where you want to put really big spells into the deck, and you're using a general that cheats the mana cost, bypasses natural mana costs.
And suspend is one of these mechanics that is incredibly powerful, because when you're suspending a card with Joyra, you're putting it in a zone where very few players are able to interact with it. Very few cards can interact with that card. So if someone had like hand disruption, they can't really do much about what Joyra is doing with these cards.
Yeah, and you'll notice it costs 2 mana for her to basically suspend a card. And so, you know, there was a lot of text there. I'm just going to boil down what she does. You pay 2 mana and you take a card from your hand, and then in about 4 turns, it's going to come into play.
Yeah.
So you can put a really big Eldrazi for 2 mana on, you know, turn 4, and then on turn 8, it's just going to come out. Mm-hmm. You won't have to pay mana when it comes out. This is one of the more broken mechanics that's ever been created.
Yeah.
In Limited, it's a total house.
Yeah, exactly. You saw a lot of that with the first Modern Masters. And speaking of Modern Masters, a lot of the cards that you'd want to cheat out with Joyra are being re-released.
Yes.
So it's a great way to put stuff out. Also, notably, let's not forget, she doesn't have to tap when she does this ability, so by turn 5, you're exiling 2 cards from your hand.
Yes, and that's actually a really good point. Oftentimes, you'll play her, and you'll have ways to immediately activate her 2, 3, 4 times.
So
you'll just put 4 cards into exile, and then it's just like, it's almost like a bomb that's ticking down.
Yeah.
Everyone can see, like, there's these 4 huge cards that are going to come into play in a couple turns, and if they can't do anything about it, you know, sometimes you can just win when they come in, so...
Yeah, so one of those first bombs, or sort of the first category that Josh has listed here, is big and flashy cards. And we're not just talking flashy like they're really shiny and pretty. We're talking flashy as in they blow stuff up.
And they cost a lot of mana.
Yeah.
They're the type of cards that you always think about when you play EDH, which is like these huge cards that you'd never be able to play, these 10 mana cards.
Yeah.
You know, and speaking of the new Modern Masters set,
Our first guy is... or girl, or thing. I don't know if Ulamog has a gender, but it's Ulamog, the infinite hero. He is the most delicious hero you've ever eaten.
Is it hero?
No, it's Gyre. But I do like to think of him as the giant, just Mediterranean.
Just pressed between some pita bread.
Yeah, some falafel.
He's going to eat us as a hero.
We'll call him Falafel happen. The Infinite Hero. He's an 11-drop Eldrazi. That's a 10-10 legendary creature. When you cast him, you can destroy target permanent. So already pretty good.
And remember, when things come off suspend, you do cast them. You Correct. Just cast them without paying their mana cost. So you do get that.
Yeah, which is really nice. It also enters the battlefield and all that stuff. Indestructible. And he has Annihilator 4, so whenever he attacks, defending player sacrifices 4 permanents. Blech. And when Ulamog is put into a graveyard from anywhere, its owner shuffles his or her graveyard into his or her library. And this is on most of all the Eldrazi because they don't want you reanimating these guys from the graveyard.
Yeah, they don't want busted. You to just be able to dump them in the graveyard, cheat them out like yeah. super early. So
instead, cheat them out with Joyra.
Yeah. Ulamog is in the deck, obviously, because he's just a big thing you can cheat out. You can put Kozilek in. I don't have him just because I don't own him yet, but hopefully I will soon.
Yes, definitely.
Here's another one. There's a Tidespout Tyrant. He's 5/3 blue, so 8 total for a 5/5 creature djinn. He's a fly. He flies. 5/5 flyer for 8. What? But he says, whenever you play a spell, return target permanent to its owner's hand.
Ooh.
So from then on, you're just bouncing stuff anytime you play anything.
Mm-hmm.
So very, very powerful effect.
And a card like that's actually kind of hard to play in a deck that asks of you to have 3 blue mana.
Right.
So it's actually nice because you can have very little blue in this deck and still play a card like this. By the way, this deck does not have a little bit of blue. It's got a lot.
Yeah, but it only costs you 2 mana to suspend it. It doesn't matter. It's not...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Blatant Thievery is the next card. 4/3 blue. So 4 blue, blue, blue for 7 total converted mana cost. It's a sorcery. For each opponent, gain control of target permanent that player controls. Oh, yes. We're not just talking about creatures here, guys. We're talking about...
Permanence,
yeah.
It also doesn't say until end of turn.
Yeah.
You just get something from everybody. You
the pick Oracle text actually says this effect lasts indefinitely.
Yeah.
So
so you just get it unless they Homeward Path or something. You just get the best thing everybody's got.
Yeah.
Yeah, very powerful. The next one is Thought Reflection. Thought Reflection is 4/3 blue for an enchantment. It says, if you would draw a card, draw 2 cards instead. Why
sounds,
not?
Just have pretty good.
Just have double the amount of cards you were gonna get.
Yeah, and
that stacks really well with other effects like Rhystic Study, mm-hmm. and you know, even like Brainstorm and stuff will just draw you extra cards.
Yeah, that's actually really sweet.
Yeah.
Kendirect Leviathan is the next one. 6/2 blue creature Leviathan. When Kendirect Leviathan comes into play, return all other non-land permanents to their owner's hands. He is essentially. Cyclonic Rift, yeah. But he costs 8 mana, so that's why you want him in this deck.
It returns yours also. It's not just opponents.
Yeah, exactly. And the beauty about this card is he also has Unearth. So for 6 in the blue, which actually is 1 less than he actually costs, you can return this card from your graveyard to the battlefield. It gains haste, and then you exile at the next end step. But you essentially get to have this effect twice. And right. Cyclonic Rift costs 6 to do, and this costs 7 to do from the graveyard. This card is actually just really good in general.
Yeah, it's very strong. Well, this is a good time to talk about some intricacies with Suspend. So, Kedrect Leviathan, it bounces all other non-land permanents, yours included. So what happens is
right.
everyone gets their lands, but everything else goes back to their hand, and you end up with a 5/5, which is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But the way Suspend works is I get to stack how my Suspend cards come out of Suspend if they've all... got 0 time counters on them at the same time. So if I cast Joyra, and then the next turn I suspend 2 cards, and one's Kedrek Leviathan and the other's Ulamog, what I can do is stack it so that Kedrek Leviathan comes in first, bounces everybody else's permanents back to their hand, and then Ulamog lands.
Oh.
So now I have an Ulamog and the Leviathan out. So you can imagine if I can suspend 4 or 5 cards... Now, all of a sudden, Kedrick Leviathan is coming in, bouncing everything, but I've got 5 or 6 things out.
Yeah.
That's the way to really abuse the card with Suspend. And then...
You're controlling the board wipes is kind of what the idea is.
Yes, when they happen, because your stuff that's on Suspend is sort of protected from whatever's about to happen out there. And mm-hmm. that we're going to... So the next category we're going to go into, the next category we're going to go into... really takes advantage of this. And this is the mean part of the deck.
This is actually how the deck really works and, for the most part, closes out the game very quickly is because of this part right here.
I mean, this is the type of deck that can win on turns 6-ish, you know, mm-hmm. if you get really good draws.
Or just make it on turn 6 that everyone has to draw ridiculously well in order to beat the deck.
Beat you.
Yeah,
yeah,
because everything's off the board. You have an Ulamog and they have to top deck a removal spell to kill it or whatever.
Right. So I'm calling the next category... the mean part. So the first, and they're all very similar cards, so we'll go through a few of them. The first one is Yucklehops.
Yucklehops.
A very famous card. Everyone hates it. It's 4 and 2 red for a sorcery. It says, well, destroy. It says bury, but now it says destroy all artifacts, creatures, and lands. And I'm assuming creatures can't be regenerated because that's what buried means.
Yeah. None of them can be regenerated.
Oh, right. Yeah. If you could regenerate a land, that'd be sweet.
artifact, so it's, creature,
it's
I guess.
Destroy all artifacts, creatures, and lands.
Oof.
So again, this is how you stack it. You've got 2 or 3 things on suspend. 2 of them are creatures and 1's Yucklehops. You have Yucklehops resolve first. It blows away all creatures, artifacts, and lands. And then Ulamog comes out. And then another big creature comes out. And now nobody even has lands. So if you've got Ulamog and another huge creature and everyone else has no lands, how are they supposed to do anything about those guys?
Yeah.
So
they just have to hope to draw their, you know, very cheap removal spells. And even then, it's not really.
And the land to cast it.
And the land to cast it. Yeah, the right land. In general, whenever you can reset the game and then still be, it's like, hey, let's start the game over, except I have Ulamog out.
Yeah, you're going to win.
Yeah, you're going to find yourself winning a lot because he's also blowing up every permanent they have.
Yeah, they're like someone, play a land, go, and you're like, attack you, sacrifice your land. Yeah. Crap.
Yeah, they could even have like a semi-good start. You know, they'd be like, all right, play an exploration, do this, this, and then you're like, Ulamog swings at you, destroy it all. And
yeah, if you can't play 5 things, you don't get to keep anything.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty brutal. Next up is Obliterate. Also brutal. 6 and 2 red for a sorcery. Obliterate can't be countered. Very important. Mm-hmm. Destroy all artifacts, creatures, and lands. They can't be regenerated. So it's Yucklehops, but for 2 extra mana, and it can't be countered.
You don't actually care about the extra mana because you're suspending it for the same price. So
yeah.
It doesn't matter. There's Devastation. It's 5 and 2 red. Destroy all creatures and all lands. The last one is Decree of Annihilation. It's 8 and 2 red. And it says, remove all artifacts, creatures, lands, graveyards, and hands from the game. That means exile. Sorry, that's Oracle text. And you can also cycle it for 5 and 2 red. And if you cycle it, you can just destroy all lands.
Cycling on that card is really nice. One thing that I should mention is that in this game, if it ever does get to the late turns, let's say people just keep removing Joyra or whatever, your cards are all really good top decks. Because if you have enough mana to play these ridiculous cards, then you are in great position.
Yeah, it is a really good point. It's because once you're around turn 8 or 9 and you just have the amount of mana to just straight cast this stuff, all your stuff is super powerful.
Indeed. So one thing that is very important in this deck is like, okay, sure, we put 4 time counters on. Does it mean we have to wait 4 turns for all this stuff to happen? Everyone's going to know exactly when it happens, and they're going to be able to plan for it or maybe try and shut you out of the game beforehand. So we have our next category, time twisting. Ooh, playing with time.
Playing with time.
Which means taking, finding ways to get rid of these counters, these time counters on these suspended cards and get them out a little bit faster.
Mm-hmm.
The first up is aptly named Joyra's Time Bug. It's a 2-drop artifact creature. It's a 1/2. And you can tap it to choose target permanent you control or suspended card you own. If that permanent or card has a time counter on it, you may remove a time counter from it or put another time counter on it. So and you're mostly going to remove, but sometimes the other two.
Yeah, you will usually remove, but once in a while, you need things to stack up so they're all coming off their time counters at the same time. So maybe like on one turn you suspended something and the next turn you suspended 2 more things. And so now you actually want to add a time counter to the one just so that you want it to resolve on the same turn as the other 2. So
or something happens and you're like, wait, I don't want that to come out right now. Let's push the clock, the doomsday clock as it is, back a little bit.
Yeah, very good point. The next one is Rift Elemental. It's a creature elemental for 1 red. It's a 1/1. But it says you pay 1 in a red, and you can remove a time counter from a permanent you control or suspended card you own, and then Rift Elemental gets +2/+0 until end of turn. So you don't care so much about the pump, although you might just smack somebody with it if they're open, but what you can do is you can just pay 4 mana and take 2 time counters off something.
Yeah.
And that can be really surprising because people are like, okay, in 3 turns that thing comes out, and you're like, no, actually, next turn it comes out.
Yeah. That is quite nice, actually.
Yeah.
Not having to tap it, too, is very useful. Next up, we got Paradox Haze. This is probably the one card when you played it I had no idea
this
ever existed because you would never play this except in such weird cases, and this is exactly one of them. It's an enchantment aura where you enchant a player, and it says, at the beginning of enchanted player's first upkeep each turn, that player gets an additional upkeep step after this one.
So you just get 2 upkeeps.
Yeah, a.k.a. 2 time counters get tossed off a card.
Off all your guys. So that's super powerful because if you have 3 cards suspended, it's removing 1 from each Twice,
yeah. So it, instead of four turns, it's a two-turn clock for these cards to get out. Wow, that is pretty good.
Again, you can just so much change what everyone thinks going to happen. You play it, they're like, okay, we got four turns, and then you play that card, and they're like, uh-oh, next turn. You know, it just really messes with time. The next one is Clock Spinning. It's one blue for an instant. It says, choose a counter on target permanent or suspended card. Remove that counter from that permanent or card, or put another one of those counters on it, but it has buyback 3. So if you pay 4 mana, when this card resolves, instead of going to the graveyard, it goes to your hand.
Yeah, not to mention it's an instant, so you're able to do it at end step and then do it again immediately during your upkeep after you untap.
Yep.
So you can actually, I believe you can stack it so that, it's during your upkeep. Mm-hmm. You guys know, so if it goes down to 1 and then you untap, play Clock Spinning again, buy it back again, then the card has 0, then it doesn't matter.
And you cast it, yep.
Yeah, so you can take it from 3 to 0 and an end step, upkeep, and playing this card twice.
For 4 mana.
Yeah. With the buyback. Buyback is so very, very powerful.
One of the more broken mechanics also.
Yeah, time crafting. Guess what? We were crafting with time here. X and a red for a instant. Choose one. Remove X time counters from target permanent or suspended card, or put X time counters on target permanent or a time counter on a suspended card. So that's nice.
You can either add or subtract as many as you pay mana for. So you can just, this one is an instant, like right now I need this card. I'll just take all the counters off it.
Yeah, exactly. Not to mention instant speed, always great. We always talked about why instant speed is just so much better in this case. And the fringe cases where you do want to put the time counter on something. It's nice because now you can be like, I want exactly 3 counters on this.
Yeah, and I would say like there's quite a number of times, like, okay, yeah, 75% of the time you're taking a counter off. Mm-hmm. But there's a decent amount of time where you're like, I'll just add one because I want all the stuff to line up.
Yeah. And you get to fulfill your magical Christmas land that much more when you do
that. Exactly. It's so much cooler when it's like, okay, 6 things come off of suspend. I stack them this way. Here's what happens. You know, yeah, it's just more impressive.
That's quite nice.
So the next category I'm calling Cheated Out.
Cheated Out.
And these are cards that just simulate Joyra's effect. So they cheat huge things out into play in other ways. There are decks and there are cards that will mess with suspend and how suspend works. And also, we'll talk about this a little bit later, but Joyra herself is scary enough that people will go after her. And in the Tuck days, it was really tougher. It's still tough now if they really concentrate on her. So you want some cards in the deck that can still get your big stuff online so that you're not completely reliant on her. And the first one is an interesting card. It's called Aetherplasm. It's 2 and 2 blue for a 1/1 creature illusion. It says, whenever Aetherplasm blocks a creature, you may return Aetherplasm to its owner's hand. If you do, you may put a creature card from your hand into play, blocking that creature.
Whoa.
So it just cheats something huge in its place.
And it forces people to not be aggressive at you either.
Yes. It's almost like a propaganda because they don't know what you've got in your hand and they don't want to let you just put Kozilek out.
Right.
So they're like, I just won't attack you. It's just not worth it because I don't know what you might put out there in Aetherplasm's place.
Yeah. Next up, we have Quicksilver Amulet, which is a card that when I first started playing EDH found its way into every deck I made because I was like, this is awesome. This is a repeatable effect that I always want to do, and then slowly started making its way out. But this is definitely one of those decks that you want to put this kind of card in. It's a 4-drop artifact where you can pay 4 and tap it, and you may put a creature card from your hand onto the battlefield. Good in decks like Joyra, good in decks like Kalia, just because it's great insurance if your general isn't there and you still want to do some nuts, busted stuff.
It just says all your creatures cost 4 mana now.
Mm-hmm. Colorless, too.
Colorless also, yeah.
Not to mention, too, like if you need to get a card out now and you can't mess with the time counters or you don't want to suspend it, sometimes you do want to have the option to be able to cheat something out immediately.
Yep. And with Quicksilver Amulet, I believe you can also put something out on the end step or whatever because it is.
Yes.
Yeah. So that it also sort of gives you pseudo flash for one creature, which is very powerful also. The next one is called Omen Machine. It's a 6-drop artifact. It says players can't draw cards.
What? Why are you playing this card?
At the beginning of each player's draw step, that player exiles the top card of his or her library. If it's a land card, the player puts it onto the battlefield. Otherwise, the player casts it without paying its mana cost.
Wow.
This is just a let's play the odds. I believe that my cards are bigger and more expensive than yours, so I'm just going to get a lot more out of this than you are.
And not to mention, you're going to force some people to play an instant counterspell.
Yeah, it turns off all counterspells. Not all. The ones you already had in your hand are
fine,
but
just,
otherwise.
It just forces people to do stuff that they may not necessarily want to do, or like hold something in their hand and be like, oh, crap, I guess I will play this like burn spell or whatever right now for a minimal amount of damage.
It's also a really good card to drop after you've done the suspending. So you play Joyra, suspend four things, drop Omen Machine, and it's like, well, if you don't have the answer in your hand, it's going to be really tough, because if you draw it, and let's say it's a counter spell, it's not going to, you have to play it right now. Mm-hmm. So it's, you can't do that. So, and if it's a Swords to Plowshares, you need to play it.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah. So,
very interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it also, I realized any spells with X in them just suck.
Yeah.
Because you don't get to pay X for it, I believe. Next up, we have Braids, but not the banned one. It's Conjurer Adept, 2/2 blue. It's a 2/2 legendary creature human wizard. At the beginning of each player's upkeep, that player may put an artifact, creature, or land card from his or her hand onto the battlefield. Yes, exactly what this deck wants to do. Thank you, Braids. There's also a reason that people build decks around you, because you're terrifying.
Yep. And normally, Braids, one of her downsides is she's in blue. Mm-hmm. And so you can run into deck, because blue does have some big creatures, but it doesn't have as many as some of the other colors. And so you can run into these situations where, like, if she's my general, I'm in mono blue.
Yeah.
You know,
you're kind of forced to play Eldrazi or like Blightsteel Colossus.
Yeah. Which are still awesome, don't get me wrong. But
yeah, you don't get like green monsters or whatever. Imagine if Braids was any of those colors.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's go to my favorite category. I believe it's yours also. Yep. The cards you might not think of.
But how do we do this category if we haven't thought of the cards?
Well, by you, I mean the listener.
Oh. Makes a lot more sense now.
This was actually one on our Overperformers episode with Wedge from the Mana Source.
I think we mentioned this deck, too, with this.
Yeah, I think we did. So the card is called Braid of Fire. It's 1 and a red for an enchantment. It says, cumulative upkeep. Add red to your mana pool. And we've explained cumulative upkeep before, but I'll do it again. It means at the beginning of your upkeep, put an age counter on this permanent. Then you sacrifice it unless you pay its upkeep cost for each age counter on it. So it grows. Mm-hmm. So on the first turn, it has 1 age counter, and it adds 1 red to your mana pool. On the second turn, it has 2 age counters and adds 2 red. So 5 turns later, it's adding 5 red to your mana pool during your upkeep. Now, this used to be bad because of mana burn. Mana burn was an old concept, an old rule in Magic, that if you had unspent mana at the end of any of your phases that you couldn't spend, then it would do 1 damage to you for each unspent mana. But they decided that was complicated, and really that rule barely ever came up, so they just abolished it. So there's a whole bunch of old cards that basically are trying to punish you by giving you mana burn that just don't actually do anything anymore, so they're all upside. Braid of Fire is one of them. The complicated thing about Braid of Fire is that it gives you the mana during your upkeep.
Yeah.
Which is generally not as useful, because you can't cast creatures with it, or enchantments, or most artifacts, unless they have flash or something.
Yeah, Vedalcan Orrery is a card that you would want with this one.
Yeah, but Joyra, her ability is an instant.
Ooh.
So the 2 mana to suspend something and put 4 time counters on it, you can do during your upkeep.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you do with Bray of Fire, is you get Joyra out, and then it makes activating Joyra like very easy and very cheap.
Right. Same thing goes also for Rift Elemental, if you need to spend the mana to be getting rid of the time counters in another way.
Yep.
So Braid of Fire, that card is so silly, because the first turn you play, you're like, that sucks. And then by turn 4, you're like, oh gosh, Josh is just, he's able to put out like 8 things from his hand if he has the card draw to support it. Terrifying.
Yeah, I think it's maybe not the, but it's a top 3 or 4 most powerful card in the deck.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Yep. Time Sifter is next, a 5-drop artifact. At the beginning of each player's upkeep, each player exiles the top card of his or her library. The player who exiled the card with the highest converted mana cost takes an extra turn after this one. If 2 or more players' cards are tied for the highest cost, the tied players repeat this process until the tie is broken.
So everyone flips the top card, highest mana cost, they get the next turn.
Yeah, which is probably going to be you again
it's
for the
most
part.
It's very often going to be you, because you're playing a bunch of dudes that cost 9 and 10 mana.
Yeah, just hope you don't flip over your Joyra's Time Bug or whatever. Braid of Fire, I guess.
Every once in a while, you don't get the next turn, and then you get the turn after that one. We've seen games where Time Sifter comes out, and literally, like, it goes, it's my turn, it's my turn, it's my turn, it's Jimmy's turn, it's my turn, it's Jimmy's turn, it's my turn, it's my turn, it's Jimmy's turn. You know, because there's just 2 decks that have high casting cost stuff, and nobody else does.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very crazy card that can do, like, weird stuff, but ultimately, you come out ahead because the average converted mana cost of your stuff is so much higher than most decks.
Yeah, and you're actually taking use of the extra turn a lot more than someone else might, because someone else might be having like have no cards in hand and just be top decking each mm-hmm. card and like hoping they can play that card this turn. In your case, you have like four different time bombs going off and they're all ticking down, and this is just helping you get closer to it. So it's a nice way to both guaranteed get extra turns and have it be repeatable.
Yep. And the last one is an interesting one. I don't think most people put in. It's Cauldron of Souls. It's a 5-drop artifact. You tap Cauldron of Souls. You choose any number of target creatures, and each of those creatures gains persist until end of turn.
Woo!
Yeah, and this is just a protection plan against board wipes and also against your own board wipes. So you can't you can't always craft it so that everything comes off a suspend at the same time, and you stack it so a big board wipe happens, destroys all their lands and all their creatures, and then your guys come into play. Sometimes you've got creatures out, but you still want to play Yuckle Hops. So what you can do is you can give all your guys persist, and so your guys live through that, since you've got so many board wipes in the deck. Now, some exile, so those ones obviously won't work with it. Right. But the reason Cauldron of Souls is so good is because some say cannot be regenerated. Well, persist is not the same as regeneration, so persist still works.
Yeah, that's definitely very true. Cauldron of Souls, too, is just, in general, a great card in a lot of decks. Because
I feel like it's not played enough. I don't see it
enough.
Yeah,
and the thing is, like, it doesn't cost mana to activate it. So for 5 mana, you just get this ability out there that says, you cannot board wipe me, for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone that's like a 1-1 is, of course, not coming back. But otherwise, it's great.
Otherwise, it's great. And also, it does have political ramifications in that you can save other people's stuff. Because it says, choose any number of creatures. So you don't have to just only choose your own. You can be like, I'll save my 3 guys, and hey, you want to keep your 2 guys?
Yeah.
What are you going to do for me? Okay, you can keep them.
Yeah, exactly. And hope they don't swing at you after. Don't break your trust.
Don't break your promises, people.
Yeah, exactly. How do we beat this deck, Josh? I would say this. You don't, really. It's really hard to, because Yuckle Hop.
Yeah, there's a couple ways to beat this deck. There's one way we don't talk about enough, which is just you have to keep the general in check. So keeping Joyra in check, and the whole table will probably have to come to an agreement to do it. Joyra only costs 3 mana, so it's tough, but you can just sort of make the agreement that, like, we're just not going to let Joyra sit out there.
Mm-hmm.
Because it'll become pretty mana intensive, and most of the time you play her, and you need at least one turn to untap with her to suspend all your stuff.
Right.
So that's the first thing I would say. And the second is, you do cast the suspend cards. So when they come, when they have no age counters, and you cast them without paying their mana cost, they are cast, so you can counter them. And you see them coming.
Oof.
So it's not like normal spells where you're like not ready. A lot of times you're like, I know there's a world fire, and it's about to come off suspend in a turn or two. And so if you just hold up your counter magic, then you know you can catch it and when you're going to catch it.
Yeah, that is interesting. Well, the nice thing is that you're able to do that. The sad thing is that you're not going to be able to predict, because the deck has multiple ways of, out of nowhere, being able to rush a card into play when you're not ready.
Yeah.
So you might like set up your board and be like, great, now I have my my wizards out for my patron wizard to counter this guy or whatever. But it's just too late.
They play one of those instants that takes 2 extra time counters off, and you thought you had 2 turns, and now you don't. And being aware that they have that ability, so you actually will have to hold your counter magic up maybe 2 turns earlier than you think.
Yeah, exactly. This deck does have the ability to just out of nowhere smack you in the face for, 12, 13, 14, 15, 20, make you sacrifice some permanence.
I mean, it can out of nowhere destroy the entire board.
Yeah.
And have a 12-12 sitting there. So that's, it's very powerful. Let's talk about fighting through their disruption. So how to combat what they're trying to do to you. They're trying to keep Joyra in check. The really important thing is to only play Joyra when you have a good plan for, like, okay, I'm going to play her, and if they don't counter her, if they go to kill her right away, I know that I have enough mana to suspend at least 1 or 2 things that are important.
Yeah.
So you get something out of it. Instead of playing her on turn 3 and just hoping that you untap with her, that's a very dangerous way to go, because if they remove her, now she costs 5. Then once you play her on the 5 turn, if they remove her, she costs 7, and now you're not even cheating stuff into play anymore. You're just playing a 7 drop. So you have to be smart about it.
Yeah, and I think the best way to do it is just team up, honestly,
because
you do need someone else to help you focus one person down. It's very hard for a lot of decks to just single-handedly kill one person, unless that's the exact goal they're built for.
Mm-hmm.
So Voltron decks, dedicated aggro decks, I don't know why you would do that in EDH, but yeah, focus firing, just making sure you get the person down before the clock ticks to 0 and doomsday has begun.
Well, and that's one thing about the deck is, like, you suspend three things, and then everyone can see that's going to hit all of them. And it's very hard at that point to make, like, if you're the Joyra player, it's very hard to be like, no, dude, you're fine. It's like, you're going to kill all my stuff. I'm coming after you.
I mean, I guess you're the kind of deck that it's, your modus operandi is some people just want to see the world burn.
Yeah.
And you, like, you exactly just want to do that. You don't really care otherwise.
It's like, I turn the key on the nuke. There's no stopping it.
Yeah, the clock's going down.
Yep.
And I have ways of making the clock faster. I know it's twisted, but hey, I got to do something.
So there's no negotiating now.
Yeah, certainly. The best thing about knowing when something is coming with suspend, and maybe the best way to fight this deck, is that you can just hold up counterspell for those moments, because you know it's going to come in on this certain upkeep, or you can sort of time it out based on what cards they have on the table, like Joyra's Time Bug and stuff. So you know that, like, okay, cool, we have one turn, maybe two if he doesn't activate the Time Bug, when this is going to come in. So you can just hold up a counterspell. So when the spell is cast during that person's upkeep, when the last suspend timer is removed off, you can just counter it at that point. But of course, the Joyra player can also know this and hold a counter of their own. So it may be a counter war in certain times, but it is better than letting all these crazy, crazy things happen. And the other scary part is that sometimes you need to hold up, like, three counters, because outside of that board wipe, it also has this huge thing and this huge thing coming in. So it is very difficult to combat in that way, but that is one way of sort of semi-dealing with it, or at least removing the most damaging spell out of the three or four that are coming off the stack. There's a lot of different ways to build this deck, and by a lot of different ways, I just mean more mean ways of doing it, because the deck doesn't have any ways, I think, that are very, like, fun. You know,
it's tough because she's naturally cheating huge things into play, and it's sort of, what do you want to cheat in? You know, I put some extra turn effects in the deck. That's the only deck I have that has extra turn effects. You know, you can do things like Omniscience, which lets you play all your stuff without paying its mana cost. That's a very powerful card, very expensive CMC wise, but again, you don't care about that because she's cheating everything out. So I can see how, like, you can, the particulars about what cards you want to play could change, but in general, it's just going to be big broken things.
Yeah, stuff like Jin Kataxius, Core Augur is one of those cards. And that card is also finds a home in Annamar, just because it's being able to cheat that card out is very, very powerful.
I was really hoping that the whole Praetor cycle would be in the new Modern Masters, because I want Jin Kataxius for the deck. I don't own one. And, you know, honestly, like, I built the deck, I tuned it one time. It's powerful enough.
Yeah.
So, you know, that we'll have the deck list up, and people are going to say what they always say, which is, why don't you have this? Why don't you have that? And it's like, at a certain point, I don't need this deck to be more powerful. It does what I need it to do, which is, it's mean enough. You know, and if I wanted to super tune it for a tournament or something, I guess that I could, but, you know, we don't really do that. So
I could see building this deck in a way that's directly a result of your meta, being like, hey, everyone's playing this deck or this kind of deck. I'm going to build a Joyra deck that specifically hoses those strategies, so that when the time counters are coming off, people aren't necessarily complaining. They're actually rooting for it to happen sooner rather than later.
It's also
be fun.
It's the type of deck I feel like you feel good when you have it in your bag. And it's like, you never feel like, oh, I'm just getting kicked around all night. If you ever feel like that, you can pull this deck out and it'll do some stuff. I'm not saying you'll win every game, but you just have it. And it's like, also having this deck and just the threat of pulling it out might keep people in check. It's like, man, because we get a lot of complaints and people are like, my friend plays this really mean deck, and what do I do? You know, what do I say? How do I handle it? Blah, blah, blah. One of the ways you can handle it is have your own really mean deck that he doesn't like.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's mutually assured destruction. It's like, don't make me pull out my Joyra deck, man. And he's like, okay. And he pulls out a little bit more fun deck.
That's actually happened a few, like, someone's like, oh, do we want to play that? Or, like, we sit down with Craig, and it's like, hey, Craig, maybe this guy's playing for the first time. Let's not do Infect.
Yeah, exactly.
And Craig would be like, oh, yeah, good idea or whatever. So.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes we're just like, it's the fourth game, and you know, somebody's won two of them, and we're like, screw it. I'm pulling out our best thing, man. Let's see what you got. Yeah,
everyone's coming out guns blazing, essentially. Those are actually really fun games, because you never know who's going to win. Something crazy is going to happen on every side of the board.
Yeah, those are the games where you're like, okay, hold on. I can't untap any of my stuff? No.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, go. And then the next guy's like, I destroy all everybody's lands. And okay. And then the next guy, you know, counters everything anybody plays. And it's just like, those can be awesome games.
Yeah. Do you have Fury Charm in this deck?
I do.
That card is great.
Yeah.
If you guys don't know, Fury Charm is an instant. And they reprinted in Modern Masters because there was a lot of suspend cards there. It says, destroy target artifact or target creature gets +1/+1 and gains trample, or remove two time counters from target permanent or suspended card.
Yep.
So all of those are super relevant, because sometimes you do need to give an Ulamog trample to kill someone, you know?
Yep, totally. Because with trample, he's going to hit him for 12 or something.
Yeah, exactly. That's great. There's also Aeon Chronicler. I don't know if you guys have this guy
in there. I think I have that too.
But you can suspend them for XX blue and X can't be zero.
Oh, this is a draw cards guy, right?
Yeah, and so whenever a time counter is removed from Aeon Chronicler while it's removed from the game, draw a card. So yep. You can suspend it for a ton of mana late in the game and just always make him a draw engine every upkeep. If you have like...
This is one of those guys you would actually add time counters to instead of take them away.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I love cards like that, which are... They fill one of those roles we're always talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That's card draw. But they do it in the way that your deck... So they synergize with the rest of your deck. So instead of just putting Mind's Eye in, you put that guy in, and now right. He's synergizing with what the rest of your deck is doing. So he synergizes with Fury Charm and with, you know, all these other cards, Joyous Time Bug and stuff like that. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a really smart way to go. Is
well,
to,
Fury Charm only takes stuff away, but all
but
the
sometimes
other cards.
You just want to bring him out. So
right,
yeah.
Right,
so
right,
he does
right.
He does interact with it. So
yep. And not to mention every time, yeah. So you could Fury Charm for just like a draw two.
Yep.
You know, which is great. That's the best one in a red draw two red has ever had.
Yeah.
No downsides. And again, putting stuff into suspend is such a good way to save it from people getting rid of it.
Yep.
I mean, like, people can plan their removal for it, but they're not removing it immediately. You know, sometimes you'll get a turn with it, and the creature has haste when it comes in, so even better.
That is actually why suspend is so broken. For creatures is just that haste factor.
Mm-hmm.
Because you suspend something on turn 4 and it comes out on turn 8, but it means you still have 8 mana available on your 8th turn to do other stuff.
Yeah.
So it's pretty crazy. Yeah, the deck is very powerful. It is fun to play, but people will not like playing against it, which is why, you know, I don't pull it out very often. But it is fun to talk about mean and powerful decks sometimes.
Yeah, totally. I mean, what other mean decks do you have? Maybe we could do a little side topic here.
Yeah, I have one other. Decks. I have Derivi.
Right. And that deck is actually more of a combo deck because it's all about tapping people down and keeping them tapped down. And
yeah, it's a stacks deck.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it's a Stasis, Static Orb, Winter
but
Orb.
But I'd say that has a much less chance of winning than a deck like this does. Because
oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because while that deck may hinder a player, it doesn't directly just shut them out by removing all their lands, you know? Like
plus, every time I pull out that deck, you pull out Anemar, and Anemar doesn't
any
care.
Any green-blue is great against that deck. Because
yeah,
they...
especially Anemar, but Prophet of Kruphix, really, that deck doesn't have a lot of ways to deal with you. I mean, but it does have the power to literally stop everyone else from doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it does have that strength. It's just not the same strength as like Worldfire stacked with Ulamog coming in after that.
Yeah, pretty much. And if you get rid of a couple of key pieces with that Derivi deck, then it kind of it doesn't function as optimally.
What's your meanest deck?
I would say the mono red deck turn Kiki-Jiki is pretty up there just because it's capable of going infinite by like turn 4 sometimes. Mm-hmm. If
it's
you
very
right
powerful.
Draw. Yeah, and it's also got like my only copy of Mana Crypt and stuff, so the power level like really does shoot up when you have that card in the deck. That and Anemar probably.
Yeah, Anemar is not mean, I don't think. It's doing things in a way that people are used to. Like it's hitting you with big creatures. It's doing it early, but it's not hindering other people from doing stuff.
Anemar plays kind of similarly to a playstyle I guess I adhere to a lot being a red player, which is the glass cannon. You're gonna fire as strongly as you can, but you can also just break apart at the flick of a wrist.
Well, and the way to counter Anemar is similar to Joyra in that just take care of Anemar a few times.
Mm-hmm.
Because Anemar is your cheating big things into play deck, right?
Yeah,
it's doing the same thing just in a different way.
Yeah, and I actually don't play cards like... You would think I'd play Quicksilver Amulet in there,
right.
But I don't, because I just want to play creatures. That's all I want to do is play creatures and protect Anemar. And he already
but
does
you probably
have
like, Elvish Piper or something like that, right?
Well, the big thing about Anemar, he's... Yeah, I have Piper, and I have a couple of those guys, but Anemar is just straight-up protection from white and black, two colors that are focused on exiling and kill spells, so it is very hard to get rid of him sometimes.
Most of the time, you just have to board wipe. I mean, because most of the pinpoint removal is going to be either damage-based, which he gets too big for really fast, or it's going to be in white and black.
Like, imagine if I played that deck against your Athreos Shadowbone Apostle deck.
Oh, man.
It would be a very one-sided battle.
Yeah. Yeah. Because what am I going to...
I don't know what you're going to do.
Yeah, there's no... It's white and black for one thing, and also, I don't... Yeah, no.
I mean, you could... I can't even think of it. I'm sure there's a win condition in there somewhere. You always build those in.
I would probably be like a 4% chance to win that heads up. You know how I'd beat that deck?
How?
Hey, Craig, can you kill Anemar?
Hey, Craig, you're playing Infect, right?
Yeah.
Clearly, you have to go. Look, I'm giving you 4 turns, and that's enough to kill me with Infect, right, Craig?
I mean, geez, I don't even have a Eldrazi in my deck. He's got like 12.
Yeah, exactly.
You can play Blightsteel Colossus at any moment. What am I going to do? I'm going to do like get a demon into play. Woo!
Yeah. I'm going to make you pay life to not bring this back to my hand. Oh, no. He's going to hit you in one turn and kill you. Yeah. So,
see?
Yeah.
Politics.
Politics.
Politics is the answer to almost every problem that you have in EDH.
Yeah, exactly. And we actually got an email from a listener talking about a potential topic called, like, we're going to call it, I don't know, the High Rollin' Club. High Rollers.
Oh, High Rollers.
Yeah, where we just talk about really expensive cards, but at the end of the day, I think we're just gonna say this a bunch during that podcast, which is you can buy all these cards, but it doesn't mean you're gonna win.
Yeah, not at all. But I am excited to talk to be a high roller.
Yeah, well, you know, we're going to Vegas in a couple of days, so we will be high rolling then. Woo.
Oh, we're gonna be high rollers by the time we leave.
I hope so.
Don't. Yeah, we both were like, do I believe that? I don't really believe
like
that.
We're, and we're also both on the ends of like, do we jinx it if we say we're gonna be high rollers, or are we jinxing it if we say I hope so, or are we not jinxing it, or are we? Hold on. Do we have to believe in superstition?
It's bad luck to be superstitious. It's bad luck to be superstitious.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I just hope I draw well in the magic games that matter against everyone.
Magic
on
games? I don't even care. I just hope I throw dice well. What are you talking about? Magic games, man. Whatever. I hope I lose my first match so that I have more time to like hang out with everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Josh and I have both been focused on doing this. Every time we roll the dice before the beginning of a game, we're just like, just don't roll a 7 and you're good to go.
Yep. Just want to get out of the practice of rolling 7s ever.
Yeah. And you know, I think it works.
I'm pretty sure it does.
If you just focus on not rolling a 7.
Sure. That's how it works, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
That's how odds and everything work.
Mm-hmm. That's how the mathematical world works.
We ready for the end step?
Let's move on to the end step. This may be potentially our only end step for this week, so I guess we'll both say something cool.
All right, you got something cool?
No, I was hoping you'd go first. I
have two.
Ooh.
The first one is that the Huffington Post today announced that the best beach in the United States is Waimanalo Beach, which,
hey,
my girlfriend Elle and I, that was literally our backyard when we lived in Hawaii 2 years ago. And when I say backyard, I mean we walked out our back door, we opened the gate, and that was the sand was right there.
What?
So we lived off of what is now, at least for right now, I don't know, it evidently changes, the best beach in the United States. So I was pretty excited.
Was it the best beach when you lived there as well? I mean, I would say it probably was.
Yeah, the reason we chose to live there is because it's just a beach that my family would go to a lot growing up. It's on Oahu. I won't tell everyone where it is because the locals will not like that. Sean Marvin, local boy from Waianae. I think he said Waianae. I hope that's right. Anyway, he'll probably know where Bellows and Waimanalo is, the beach.
Was that near your cousin or uncle's shaved ice place? Or is that on another island?
No, my cousin's shaved ice place is actually on Maui. He's got a few, but this is on Oahu. But anyway, so it was cool. We were like, sweet, we literally lived on the best beach in the United States.
For this year only, potentially.
Yeah, I don't know why it changes. Maybe...
I guess... Do you think someone goes to each of the beaches every year and it's like, I believe this beach has lost a little quality since last year. Down, like, tick some marks
I
off.
I like how they sound like that. And also, I want their job.
Yeah, it's a pretty sweet job. Hey, Bill, can you visit 6 beaches in the next 2 months and just tell us
man.
Which you like the most? Like, dang it.
I got the worst job ever. See, my guy sounds different than your guy.
Yeah. Oh, man. Oh, the sand stuck in my toes.
Oh, jeez.
I got to wash my feet off after I come off the beach. Now, I sound like Robert Durst from The Jinx.
You do.
Oh, this beach is not okay. I got to float some body parts.
That's
out
a pretty
there.
Good Robert Durst, actually.
That's not something to be proud of, by the way. We're talking about a documentary called The Jinx.
I think we talked about it on the end step one, too. Yeah.
What's your second end step, a.k.a. my end step, because I can't think of one.
Okay, I got one for you, Jimmy. You're going to like this one.
Oh, good. So it is my end step then.
Yep. Jimmy's end step is called Eli. I don't think we've given Eli enough credit on the show. Eli does all the editing for the show. He does the video and the audio. He fixes all the screw-ups that we make. I mean, you guys don't hear when we're like, hold on, Eli.
Hold on, Eli is a phrase that is uttered probably 3 to 4 times a podcast.
Yeah, at least. You guys never hear us say that, but we're always going like, Eli, hold on, I'm going to re-say that. And then, hold on, let me think of how I want to re-say that.
Yeah, we are not flawless. So what you guys are hearing, if you guys think like, wow, those guys never mess up, it's not true. We mess up all the time.
He takes out a lot of like just dead pauses when we're like trying to think of something clever, or where like the guy says something and you're like, oh, you're done. Oh, okay. I'll talk now. Yeah.
Or when we're trying to do the end step and we're like, hold on, what do we talk about? For a second there, when you said Eli, I was like, is Josh plugging his video he did again?
Oh,
did Josh make the video because of our editor, Eli? It's dedicated to him.
Oh man, the Eli has been our most common end step.
Yeah, by far.
Yeah, I mean now it's they're two different things, but now we're just confusing everybody. Jimmy,
Eli, you were a 2-for-1 man. You were a great value as a magic card, so thank you, buddy.
Yeah, so Eli does not get enough credit. He
texted me today and was like, "Hey man, when are we playing EDH?" And I thought about it. I was like, "I haven't played Commander in 3 or 4 weeks."
We've been so concentrating on Modern Masters that we've been neglecting our Commander playing. So yeah. when we play EDH with everybody in Vegas, will probably be the first time we've played in a few weeks.
Yeah, and it's going to be by far the most concentrated, probably since the time I started playing.
Yeah, maybe. For a while there, we were getting together once a week.
Yeah, but I mean, Vegas is like 4 days straight, so I'm pretty
excited. Oh, yeah, we're not going to play EDH the whole time, though.
Yeah, well, maybe.
Because Modern Masters will be out.
Yep, and they're going to be cheap drafts firing, $30 drafts, and I know it's not that cheap in general, but it's the best value you're going to get for the format. Because I've heard a lot of LGSs are doing upwards of $50, $60 yeah. with prize support, of course. Yeah. But this does have prize support as well at the GP, and it's going to be at full retail, which is great.
That's actually really great value, because if you pay $30, that's what you would pay for the 3 packs anyway. Mm-hmm. So any chance to win anything above that is just gravy. It didn't cost you anything. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I've been doing a lot of the sealed generator packs online, and they also list out the estimated value of the packs. And almost always you're placing $8, $9, $10 based on the uncommons, the foil in the pack. And so you actually have a pretty good shot of just either coming close to breaking even with the cards that you buy or get from the pack, or even just clearing a ton of profit, because you can open some awesome stuff.
Well, let's talk about this really quick, because there's been a lot of, for lack of a better word, whining out there about the value in Modern Masters, and about how it's different than it was or lower than people think. And I totally understand, because Wizards did put the price point at $10, which sets expectations at a certain amount. And
Modern Masters 1 packs, by the way, I believe were $6 at retail.
I think they were $6.99. Yeah. But you never found them for that after like the first week or
you
two.
You didn't even find them when they first came out. LGSs yeah. immediately marked them up because they saw that the value was much higher. So in general, the packs would be at cheapest around $10.
Right. But the thing is that a lot of the value in this new set is concentrated at Mythic. And I know that upsets some people, but that's actually the place where you want it, because that's the place where the value is going to hold.
Mm-hmm.
So if they had put more value at lower rarities, what happens is that those lower rarities are open so much that it actually dilutes the price on them, so they don't come out being worth what they were. Like, let's look at Doubling Season.
Right.
Doubling Season was a really expensive card. I think it was around $27 to $30. Then the first Modern Masters came out, and Doubling Season was at rare. And for a while, it was at $10.
Mm-hmm.
So when you first opened Doubling Season in a pack, you were like, sweet, a $27 card. Well, that's not really precisely true, because it was only worth $10 a little bit later. So unless you sold it at that moment, it wasn't really worth $27. It was worth $10.
And you'd have to wait 2 years for it to get back up to that price.
Exactly. It has slowly climbed back.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's value that's accrued over time for a lot of cards, because a lot of cards just naturally go up over time. I mean, they don't all. But I guess what I'm saying is, like,
yeah, it settled around like 12. At its lowest, it was about $12.
Mm-hmm. And what's
now? Now it's up to 24, 25 or so.
So it's almost made it back to where it was. It took 2 years, mm-hmm. and I think it probably just spiked a little bit because it's not in the new set. It probably
I believe it did a little bit.
So you want the real value to be at Mythic, because Tarmogoyf actually went up in price.
Yeah,
when insane. Modern Masters 1 came out. And it's possible that something like that will happen again, or at the very least, it's going to stay at that. Now, people are saying, oh, they should put it at different rarities and blah, blah, blah. Well, then you're just sending a message to people that they can't invest in Magic. Like, if you can't go in and buy a Tarmogoyf because you think they're going to reprint it out to all hell and it's just going to, the bottom's going to drop out of it, then what happens is, it's not that, it hurts your game because nobody plays Modern, because they go, yeah, well, I don't want to spend any money on Tarmogoyf because Wizards is going to print it into the ground and it's only going to be worth $30 and I'm going to have spent $800. So instead of doing that, I'm just not going to play Modern, which is not what they want. Nope. So they're in this really precarious position where they don't want to just destroy the market, but at the same time, they do want to make some of the cards more available. It's such a fine line to walk.
It's a fine line to walk, and it's also one that they're going to face criticism no matter what. And I'm just appreciative of the fact that they are focused on creating both a set that can reduce the value of cards enough so that people that want to buy into the format can. Because, I mean, honestly, think about it. If you're someone that wants to buy into Modern, you're not just going to go buy a box of Modern Masters and crack the packs.
You better not.
You're going to buy the singles because you're happy that Modern Masters has come out because it's reducing the price of the cards that you want to get. So you don't care about the EV of the set as a whole. You just care about what's being reprinted so they can get in on some of these cards that are cheaper now. And if you're someone that wants to draft it, then you should be very happy because Wizards has clearly spent a lot of time, 2 years actually, since the first draft archetypes came out in Modern Masters 1 to make this a really fun limited environment. And from what Josh and I have played, we've done Sealed and Draft once. It has been incredibly exciting to play and just really like, just holding the cards was a joy because it was like, I can't wait to play these cards that I've drafted because the power level is so high. And it really feels like Wizards has spent a lot of time making not just like 5 archetypes, but 10, even like more than that. Just
There's at least 11 archetypes. And the one thing, people are complaining about the limited environment.
They haven't even played it yet.
They haven't played it.
For the most part.
And they're comparing it to the first one and how great the first one was. And I would say the first Modern Masters was really great to draft. But there was one complaint I had about it, and I think most people that drafted it more than a couple times did have, which was it felt a little on rails.
Mm-hmm.
You know? After you drafted a couple times, you went, well, if I'm white-blue, I'm affinity, and I'm just going to get all the affinity cards because really, if you're blue-red, you don't want any of the affinity cards, and if you're red-white, you don't want any of the affinity cards. And so you just sort of fell into the archetype, and then you just almost didn't make a ton of decisions. This limited format, totally different. Not as on rails. There are archetypes, but there's a lot more contested cards. There's a lot more cards that sort of may fit into your archetype if you're sort of skewing a little bit one way or the other. It's a lot more nuanced. And for a set that costs $10 per pack to draft, like, you're only getting enfranchised players to draft it. So it should be like this. It's like no new players drafting Modern Masters. Don't do that. They should be drafting Cons. They should be drafting, you know, Magic Origins when it comes out.
Yeah.
Modern Masters is for us. It's for the people who play Magic all the time, and I want it to be complex.
Yeah, I do too, and it's really nice because it actually feels like you're playing a power level similar to almost a Commander deck sometimes. Like,
yeah, or Cube.
Yeah, you get to play with these, like, and that's why I like doing Cube and stuff and doing those sorts of drafts is because we're used to playing with a very high power level in EDH or doing things that are really synergistic and focused on, you know, a color pairing or even 3-color or 5-color. And Modern Masters has proven, I think, so far to be something that does that on a consistent basis.
You're excited about, like, oh my gosh, if I ever get these two cards out, this is gonna happen.
Yeah, exactly. And you were doing some busted stuff with some legendary creatures, actually. Some creatures that made me look at you playing them and be like, wow, that'd be fun to make a deck based around this. Like, there's a couple of legendary creatures in the set. There's a few, actually.
Oh, there's a bunch, yeah.
Yeah, it's great, too. It's like extra research for Commander. Getting something like Endrick Saar would be awesome to build a deck around. That guy's awesome.
Yeah, I had that in my draft deck. He's broken and limited.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I think you had a few. You had that. You had Hikari, right? And you also had the Orzhov guy.
Yep. The Ghost Council.
Ghost Council, yeah. So
I had like 3 ADH decks in one. But and yet, Jimmy still beat me in the finals. So
yeah, it's because I had...
5-color.
I had a pretty wacky deck. Yeah, I had a 5-color good stuff.
You had like an EDH deck too, because you had like 4 board wipes in that thing.
Yeah, I had Worldfire, I think. Something that... does 4 damage to everything, and then each player sacrifices 4 lands.
Yeah,
and then not that
Savage,
good and limited, I found.
It's still pretty good. Yeah,
Savage Twister, All Is Dust, and Karn. I was essentially playing, and I did first pick a Lightning Bolt in honor of myself.
In honor of myself.
And then from there...
to honor myself.
From this pack, I shall take Lightning Bolt. And things only got better from there. So,
all right, so
that was a lot of fun.
You can tell we're excited about Vegas because we're just talking about Modern Masters this whole time. Speaking of, you should go listen to the podcast, The Masters of Modern.
Yeah, they're getting great guests on every single week, it seems. And
yeah,
these are
they've
all...
really, I think they've really upped their game in the last like month or so. Their episodes have gotten a lot stronger. Those guys have really hit their stride. It's a really good podcast. I listen to it every week.
Yeah. And they know what they're talking about. And the guests that they're getting on are also people that are real pros that have played this game for a long time and really know what they're talking about. Josh and I are, for all intents and purposes, we're kitchen table players still.
Yeah.
Even though we like love to think about the game in a very analytical format and teach it to people, we're still at the end of the day just, you know, having fun, playing.
We've got
fun.
Like one PTQ top 8 between us. That's it.
Yeah. I did win a pre-sealed.
There you go. Nice. Oh, yeah, you did.
Or pre-release, sorry.
Pre-release, yeah.
Yeah.
We've
totally
won some 8-4s.
That event.
I spiked the heck out
the
of it.
Pre-release. Woo, beat a 10-year-old. Felt super good about myself. Just kidding.
I mean, yeah, I was going to say, if that 10-year-old was Jack Landis, you probably would have got beat.
Yeah, that's true. And there are some amazing... I saw someone...
There was a 12-year-old that was like 8-0 at one of the GPs or something.
Yeah, yeah. It's this kid that was playing... a Storm deck, I think, at a Legacy tournament. When
he was playing Storm?
No, but this is when he was 8, and there's a video of Gavin Verhey, who's been on the show more set Wizards now, commentating at an SGG Live or one of those events, and their minds are blown because they're watching this kid.
You should see my face right now. I'm like, are you serious? Yeah. Playing Storm?
Yeah, I'll show you the video. This kid was sequencing his plays perfectly, and he even did a couple plays, I think, on camera that Gavin was like, yeah, I wouldn't have come up with that as fast as he did. And I think he may have been that kid that 8-0'd, but he's continuing to play, and he clearly is a very skilled player.
He's the next John Finkel, I think.
Yeah, exactly. We'll call him Baby Magic instead of Johnny Magic, because he's so young when he started. All right.
All right, guys. Well, we will, like we said, we're not sure when the next episode will be. It may be this week.
Hopefully we can record with some of the people in Vegas. That'd be awesome to have sort of like a fun, just impromptu podcast. The quality may not be as high just because we're doing it on the run, but it should be a lot of fun.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.
All right, and we'll see you in Vegas.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.